This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This is an episode from the archives. I wanted to re-air it for those who are new subscribers to That's Total Mom Sense. And for those of you who have heard it before, I'm sure you'll glean new insights from our conversation. Listen in.
Hi, this is Chelsea Clinton, and you're listening to me on That's Total Mom Sense. And my experience was fantastic.
There is no hood like parenthood. Hi, I'm Kanika Chaddagupta. I'm a former CNN journalist, mom of three, including twins, and host of That's Total Mom Sense, the podcast. Now, if I had a dollar every time I heard, gee, you have your hands full. On my show, I interview change makers on their life lessons, legacy, and superpower of intuition, which I call our mom sense and dad sense. I've had the privilege of working with Mom 2.0, March of Dimes, and the White House, and have had some pretty amazing parents on my show.
Hey, what's up? I'm Kelly Rowland.
Hi, this is Chelsea Clinton.
It's me, Bobby Brown. Can't wait to share my story.
That's Total Mom Sense is a production of the Evergreen Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and on YouTube so you never miss an episode. To join my tribe, visit thatstotalmomsense.com and follow me on Instagram at Kanika Chadda Gupta. Now let's dive in to today's episode. I am so humbled to be having a one-on-one interview with my distinguished guest today. She's a thoughtful leader, author, educator, global public health advocate, and philanthropist who was blessed by destiny and has been fueled by her conviction to change our world for the better and motivate our kids to do the same. I'm honored to be joined by Chelsea Clinton. Chelsea Victoria Clinton was born in Little Rock, Arkansas, as the daughter of Bill Clinton, the 42nd president of the U.S., who served from 1993 to 2001, and her mother, Hillary Clinton, U.S. Secretary of State from 2009 to 2013, and formerly New York Senator. Her parents sent her to public school, where she skipped third grade, and at 12 years old, she entered the White House. She went on to study at Sidwell Friends, a private school in D.C., Stanford University, the University of Oxford, where her dad was a Rhodes Scholar in 1968, and Columbia, and has earned her bachelor's in history, master's in public health, and PhD in international relations. She's published several books. Her first was It's Your World, Get Informed, Get Inspired and Get Going, Governing Global Health, Who Runs the World and Why?, the children's book series, She Persisted, with women who changed history in the world of politics, sports, the arts, and science. Start now. You can make a difference. Don't let them disappear. 12 endangered species around the world. And welcome to the Big Kids Club, what every older sibling needs to know. Along with her mom, Hillary, she co-authored Grandma's Gardens and The Book of Gutsy Women, Favorite Stories of Courage and Resilience, which has been adapted by Apple TV into a docuseries called Gutsy. Chelsea lives in New York with her husband, Mark, and their three kids.
It's so ideal to have you on because you're lifting up the next generation, helping us all build our legacy. So you are so fitting to be on the show, Chelsea. Oh,
thank you so much for saying that. And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'll tell you a little backstory. I grew up in Maryland in DC, and I remember going with my mom and family members to the Easter egg roll. I remember going when, you know, your father was in office, and I feel like just seeing that life that you were leading as first daughter, parallel to our own lives, was just so fascinating for us. We were all growing up alongside you. So this is going to be a three-part conversation. It's dreams, service, and legacy. So okay. I want to start with dreams. I'm quoting from your She Persisted series. Oprah said, the biggest adventure you can ever take is to live the life of your dreams. And as a child, you lived most of your life in the White House, started at age 12 and were there till age 20. So what was it like for a young Chelsea, such an impressionable age, to be in the public eye and be in public service at such a young age?
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, when I was very little, my dad was governor of Arkansas. And so certainly not in the public eye at a kind of national scale, although very much kind of in the public eye at a state and certainly a more local level. Yet I always understood why it was so important to my parents to be in public service, and that being in the public eye was certainly not the goal. And they did everything they could to protect me from being overly scrutinized. It was kind of the inevitable byproduct of their call to service. So you think about dreams of their kind of dreams to serve and to try to improve for my dad, you know, as many lives as he could as governor and then as president. And certainly for my mom, a very clear focus on improving the lives of children and families. And so even as a teenager, you know, and my mom didn't have an elected office in the same way my dad did, I always knew that she too was very deeply involved in service when she was a lawyer, kind of through the cases that she would take and her advocacy work, and then certainly as First Lady. And so for me, while I was aware, of course, that there kind of was always kind of the public gaze on us, I knew that that was an inevitable part of my parents' call, drive, dream of service. And I always understood that, thankfully, as a kid, through the different examples that my parents shared with me of kind of what they were working on or who they were working for, you know, what they hoped to do. And I'm very thankful that they made those connections for me, you know, as a very little girl, that those connections continued when I was less little, when we were in the White House.
In your interview with Conan, I love that you shared that, you know, oftentimes there would be a state dinner with prime ministers and ambassadors present, and you would, you know, go downstairs, say hello to guests, but couldn't wait to get back to your homework. So just to have that semblance of normalcy is really great to hear.
And my parents, thankfully, also wouldn't have had it any other way. I mean, even just the anecdote around like you being at the Easter egg roll, and I just never missed school. I mean, I missed school to be there for the signing of the peace agreement between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Wow. And I missed a little bit of school to go with my parents to Russia because my grandmother had just died and they didn't want to leave me alone and they couldn't defer their trip. So there were moments where I missed school, but it was often for very exceptional circumstances, exceptional sometimes on the positive and affirmative side, and sometimes on the sadder, kind of more personal level. And I'm very thankful that they prioritized me having as kind of normal a life as possible, while also ensuring that I felt connected to their work and included in their work in whatever age-appropriate ways that that could be done.
Can you talk a little bit about your grandmother's, Grandma Ginger, Grandma Dorothy, who had such an indelible impact on the woman you've become?
Oh my gosh, thank you. I mean, I think about my grandmothers all the time. My Grandma Ginger, my dad's mom, I did not have the blessing of knowing as an adult. She passed away when I was 13, about 6 weeks before my 14th birthday. She was such a colorful character and always up for kind of feeding my curiosity and going on adventures together, and yet so rooted in the importance and the imperative of being kind and being kind of as generous as anyone could ever be. And I am so thankful all the time I spent with her and just wish that I could have had more time with her. And then my Grandma Dorothy, I was so lucky, so blessed to know for the first 31 and a half years of my life. And she played a huge role in my life. I mean, I still think, what would Grandma Dorothy think about this question? Or what would she recommend? Or what questions would she be asking about this question or this, you know, opportunity? And, you know, both of my grandmothers practiced, you know, what one of them called like the ministry of showing up. Like they just always showed up. They always were there, not only for me and for my parents and my uncles, but also, you know, for their friends, for their communities. And so just such examples of a life full of love and purpose and also very much rooted in their own ways of service, you know, at a more local level with their local community organizations, with their churches, with my Grandma Dorothy, you know, her local Girl Scout troops, but still very much to whom much is given, much is expected, and kind of what that may mean over time may shift, but that call is always there. So I am so thankful for them in my lives. I think about them all the time and miss them every day.
With your Grandma Dorothy, I mean, she was a self-made woman. And to think that, you know, the rights of suffrage for women, she was there when that was granted and then got a chance to vote for her daughter.
Yet also that you can never take anything for granted. I think partly because she and my Grandma Ginger were such kind of self-made people, certainly had a respect for hard work, but also didn't think it should be as hard and always had a real appreciation for the need to invest in more kind of rights and opportunities for people historically have been excluded, certainly including, but not only women.
So the second segment is service. And in She Persisted, you share the story of Lima Gaboe, who is a trauma counselor rather during the Civil War in Liberia. And she said, "The more I did, the more I could do, the more I wanted to do, the more I saw needed to be done." And I feel like that really captures what service is about. And your parents have dedicated their lives to service. And now you're doing the same. I feel like you're truly building up this next generation to understand what it means. I have some of your books here. My kids are just learning to read, and I cannot wait till they read It's Your World and start now, because it's really galvanizing the youth in what they have the power to do. I want to just talk about how we are living in this, what feels like a dystopian society with this ongoing pandemic. We've seen the worst: racism, gun violence, police brutality, female rights being rescinded, lack of universal childcare, corruption, climate crisis, the list goes on. But you stay optimistic. How do you do that?
I think about something a lot that Jim Kim, who was one of the founders of Partners in Health, then was the president of the World Bank, so, you know, very much had dedicated a huge portion of his life to trying to bring healthcare, good healthcare, healthcare with dignity to places that historically had had very few, if any, healthcare services, healthcare workers, healthcare options or opportunities. I'll just never forget, years ago, I heard him say that optimism is a moral choice. And I think that's right. I think that cynicism is kind of the reservoir of people who not only don't think things can change, but also people who like the status quo, or who maybe even, as you were just saying, like want to pull us backward, you know, aren't only not interested in progress, but are interested in regression. And that's not what I'm interested in. That's not the world that I want to live in, or that I want, you know, my kids or your kids to grow up in. And so I do think optimism is a moral choice. I choose to believe that my energies and time, resources, and dreams, you know, if invested in, directed in, purposed alongside, you know, other people who also believe that a more just and equitable and sustainable and healthier world is possible, that hopefully we can get closer to that in terms of kind of what our legal rights are, as well as what our opportunities are, as well as what hopefully we are protected against kind of would be. And so, you know, for me, it's both not wanting to be cynical and also just believing that hopefully some portion of kind of all that I try to do on any given day will matter. And hopefully, you know, we'll make even just a small contribution to better worlds for our kids.
Yes, absolutely. And what inspires you to write for our children?
Our kids, you know, first and foremost, you know, every time I think about it, and certainly was surprising when I was living it, but I was so struck when I was the parent of, you know, not only a daughter and then also my son, and they were both quite small, you know, how many of the children's books were oriented around male voices or male names? I mean, even like the ducks and the chickens and the cows and the frogs, you know, would be named George or Harry. And that's lovely for George and Harry, but there were so few stories centered on like the narratives of girls and women. And so that's partly why it's been so important to me to focus on the Like She Persisted series. And then for like It's Your World or Start Now or the other work to try to inform and help empower the next generation, including, you know, even young kids, is really driven by the questions that I've heard kids ask, sometimes me, sometimes other authors or teachers. And I think that those questions deserve answers. Kids who want to change something also deserve to hear stories of other kids who've already changed things and already tackled challenges in their community or on larger stages, so that hopefully they can imagine themselves doing the same or doing something similar. And so, you know, everything I do now is so inspired by my kids, you know, across like every facet of my life, including as a writer, because ultimately, like, the most important role I have is as a mom.
Absolutely.
I'm so happy to be part of the Evergreen Network. And I want to share a podcast that I've been tuning into. It's called Hear Her Sports. And it's a show for everyone who loves stories by and about female athletes and women in sport. In each episode, host Elizabeth Emery introduces strong women who've become successful in their sport and far beyond. Over the years, Hear Her Sports has highlighted Olympians, world champions, collegiate stars, and those who have made sports their life through coaching, leading, advocating, building, healing, and organizing. Each amazing woman offers hope, energy, inspiration, advice, and shares tactics and strategies that range from career building to well-being, and they speak on a broad range of topics to her listeners. New shows drop every Thursday, just like That's Total Mom Sense, and you can tune in wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow the show on social at Hear Her Sports. And now back to the interview.
Well, in your latest book, Welcome to the Big Kids Club, and in Spanish, it's Bienvenidos al Club de las Niñas Grandes, you are writing to kids who are graduating to becoming a big brother or a big sister to their baby on the way, and you share concepts with them on how to hold the baby, what's a soft spot, why do they poop so much? It's really fun and whimsical. Can you break down how you came up with these concepts, and are these what you taught your two older kids before Jesper came along?
Yes. So this was very much inspired by the questions that Charlotte and Aiden were asking, because Charlotte and Aiden are only 20 months apart. So Charlotte was not really asking questions when her baby brother was born. But then there's more than 3 years between Aiden and Jesper. And so, you know, Charlotte and Aiden were just so curious about like what this new baby was going to be. And she also very much, even more than her brother, like very much had a proprietary take on the baby before Jesper was even born. And so the Welcome to the Big Kids Club book was really like the product of all these conversations I had with our kids around what we thought might happen, but also, you know, the babies develop in different ways. And so what we thought may happen may not happen in the same way, or what had been true for the two of them, you may or may not be true for their new baby, because we didn't know if Jesper was going to be a boy or a girl. All of those conversations just compelled me to write this book, and because I thought, well, if we're having these conversations, I imagine similar conversations are happening in other families too.
And now moving on to legacy, I feel like we can't even think of legacy until we think of our village. And I remember reading It Takes a Village with my mom when I was a teen. And of course, I didn't fully understand what parenthood entailed. But now that I have three, it couldn't ring more true what, you know, your mother was trying to capture for all of us. My mom has been diagnosed with aphasia and it's early onset dementia. And just to see that evolution as a mom myself in the sandwich generation, it's very difficult. So we need our village more than anything. And I want to just share a quote that your mother had written. Parenthood has the power to redefine every aspect of life, marriage, work, relationships with family and friends. Those helpless bundles of power and promise that come into our world show us our true selves, who we are, who we are not, who we wish we could be. We are living in an interdependent world where what our children hear, see, feel, and learn will affect how they grow up and who they turn out to be. So it's all a cycle. So tell us about what your parenthood experience was like and who that village is for you.
Well, I am happy that you have a village around you. And I am certainly happy that we have a village around us. Yeah. And, you know, our village is thankfully, you know, wide and deep, you know, with our families, both my husband's family and my family, our friends, you know, our kids' amazing teachers, really wonderful caregiver, and everyone who helps us, like, you know, on any given day or week or month or year. And certainly I have to give a massive shout out to our pediatric practice and everyone who works there, from the pediatricians to the nurses to the front office staff, who have just been amazing over the last 2.5 years of COVID and all of the questions that I know so many parents have had. And so really have to just acknowledge them as a big part of our village too. So thankful for everyone who's in our village. And also will say, I had no idea the gift that my children would give me of seeing my parents as grandparents. I have thankfully a quite good memory, but don't remember like being a baby, certainly. And so seeing how much love and care and attention and attentiveness that my parents have always had toward our children, like from the moment they met in the hospital, has just been such a gift. And so seeing them, you know, read together and play together and be able to do that in different seasons and in different places and spaces has been magical for me. Also, as someone who had such a close relationship with my grandmothers, you know, to watch that relationship develop between my children and their grandparents also has been particularly meaningful. And so while, again, we are very thankful to have a wide and deep village with, you know, so much family and so many friends and everyone else who cares for, nurtures, teaches, educates, helps protect our kids, particularly thankful for my parents as grandparents.
What was like your biggest learning as a parent?
My husband took a little bit too much of the, like, you know, listen to your instincts is like the only advice to heed, because like there is a right way to like put a diaper on or swaddle a child. Like there are some things that you just need to learn from like the nurses in the hospital or your pediatric practice or your sister who has lots of children. Thankfully, again, because we've had such a robust village and have had such wonderful like advice and community, I think thankfully that helped preempt a lot of the challenges that otherwise, you know, we would have had, or the people who don't have. I mean, my husband's one of 11, and he's the 10th of 11. So many of his sisters and brothers, you know, had already had children. Many children, you know, many different stages of life. And thankfully, my parents have been really engaged and involved. But I do think kind of the funny learning was like when Charlotte was like very little and he was like, why can't I figure this out? And I'm like, because you need someone to teach you.
Right. Okay, a quick rapid fire round. I'm going to start with questions that my kids posed for you. My daughter, so every birthday she gets gifts. She donates half of them to kids' charities that we belong to. Is there any other way that she can help, you know, share and help those less fortunate in our community? She wants to know.
I don't know enough about kind of where you live, but certainly, you know, in New York City, there are ways for even like relatively young kids to get involved with food repacking and food donations, not only around, you know, Thanksgiving or the holidays when a lot of people may be engaged in that work, but also, you know, in the spring or the summer or the autumn. And you don't have to be, you know, too big or too strong to be able to like sort out potatoes or apples. Yes. And bag them to be able to then have them picked up by families who otherwise you wouldn't be able to access like fresh fruit and vegetables. So that's, I think, one way that she could help if that is an option.
That's so great. And it's something that we should do year round, of course. My son, who's a dinosaur aficionado in the home, he wants to know who would win, T-Rex or Paracerilophus in a duel.
It's probably Paracerilophus, but like as someone who loved T-Rexes as a kid, I have to go with T-Rex. Yes. Back to the OG dinosaur. Yeah.
And how do you recycle with your kids? My other twins, my boy girl twins, and then my younger one. So my one twin said, you know, he loves recycling. Do you do that with your kids? Compost, that sort of thing?
We recycle very diligently. I have found it's a really like wonderful way for our kids to be engaged. Like they understand that we like opt into renewable energy or that we use energy safe light bulbs, but they can't like help fill out the forms really, or like change the light bulbs or have the more energy efficient glass on our windows. But they can help like break down the cardboard boxes and put them in the right bin and like put the, like wash out the yogurt containers and put those in the right bin. And so, yes, like they are very involved with that.
That's awesome. Is there a book that changed your life?
50 Simple Things Kids Can Do to Save the World. Absolutely. I read it when I was, 10 or 11. It was just full of such practical ways for kids to change the world. And I then thought, oh, I can do this. And I did some of it, not all of it, but a lot of it.
Is there a song that you love to listen to on repeat?
We listen to a lot of Raffi, admittedly, because our three-year-old Jasper is like deep into Baby Beluga and Down by the Bay. And all of that makes him so happy. Also, our two older kids are really into Kids Learning Tube. Mm-hmm. So we listen to lots of those albums as well. We particularly like the Planets and the Dwarf Planet ones.
Do you have an heirloom or a Lucky Charm that you hold dear?
Don't have an heirloom or Lucky Charm, but my children gave me this necklace, which I can pull out and show you, that has like three tiny little things on it for each one of them that they picked out and gave to me for Christmas a couple of years ago. And I wear that every day.
And mom sense moment, a moment where you trust that built-in sixth sense that, you know, mom sense, dad sense, grandma sense, we all have it, where you just felt like I know what to do in this situation and it's not going to steer me wrong.
Yes. Well, all of my children have had moments of like not maybe making the right choices with their ability to balance on things or thinking they maybe should climb on things that they shouldn't climb on. And I'm very thankful that I seem to have what my husband calls a spidey sense of to like either ideally prevent that from happening or certainly catch them before they go tumbling off. And so, yes, Mark calls that my spidey sense.
I love that. I love that. And where can my audience find you and all your books?
Gosh, well, in your local bookstores, thankfully. I mean, in your local bookstores or online, you know, certainly at like Barnes & Noble or Amazon, but hopefully in your local bookstores. And we will be sharing more about the upcoming book events for Welcome to the Big Kids Club soon.
Thank you, Chelsea. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your light with the world. Thank you.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you so much for having me. And I'm so happy that your kids enjoy some of the books and hopefully will enjoy others as they get older. And then it's time for them to read those.
Yes, exactly. This is just, it's the gift that keeps on giving. They will have a book by you to read, which is amazing.
Thank you so much. And thank you to everyone in the background who like brought us together and made this possible.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. I hope you got some great takeaways from our conversation. Join my community by logging on to thatstotalmomsense.com. If you haven't already, please subscribe to That's Total Mom Sense, the podcast, wherever you listen, and be sure to rate and review. On socials, my handle is at Kanika Chadda Gupta on Instagram, Threads, TikTok, and X. You can also find me on LinkedIn. My episode videos are on YouTube and YouTube podcasts with highlights on YouTube Shorts. Write to me at thatstotalmomsense@gmail.com. My team and I read all your pitches and feedback and are so glad to be in touch. Remember, always trust your mom sense and dad sense. Stay strong, super parents. See you soon.